That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Brady and Walker, now. TV, Sportsnet 360. Radio, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome to the show. Happy Friday. Happy weekend. Hopefully you're going down to the ballpark tonight. Jays and Tigers this evening at the Rogers Center. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet 360, coast to coast. A fun day with an element of sadness today. Of course, this just coming down. Longtime NHL head coach, player, executive, Islanders legend Al Arbor passing away this morning, or this afternoon, rather, at the age of 82. We'll touch on it throughout the show today. We'll be joined in the 2 o'clock hour by longtime New York Islander great Brent Sutter as well, who played 14 years in the island and only two of them not under the tutelage of one Al Arbor. So the Toronto Blue Jays, that was strange yesterday, wasn't it? They lost, and even more odd, not everything under the sun fell their way. I guess it was bound to happen. Will Venable makes a run-saving catch. Troy Tulowitzki grounds out with the bases loaded into a double play, and Jose Bautista whiffs on a base hit, allowing three runners to score, and just like that, the Jays lose 4-1. Weird, right? It happens. It puts a tidy little bow, though, on what was otherwise a splendid road trip, 6-2, with individual losses yesterday and then early on in the trip in Philly. So the Jays head home from this trip, a game and a half up on the Yankees in the AL East, which, don't forget, when this trip began, was almost beyond best-case scenario. So now that the heavy lifting is over, I guess that's what it feels like when you come back home. What lies ahead? Well, they're home for 9 straight. Detroit for 3, Cleveland for 3, Baltimore for 3. The opportunity is there now to run away with the AL East. Jays are 40-23 at home, third best record in the American League in their home building. And tonight it all kicks off. Dickey and one-time Blue Jay Matt Boyd. So with 35 games to go and 9 straight at home, what are your expectations now for this homestand? We'll take your calls. To me, it does feel like anything less than generating a little separation in the division is disappointing.
This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
Welcome to the show. Happy Friday, Brady and Walker. You're listening on the radio here in Toronto. Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Coast to Coast and Sportsnet 360. Blue Jays and Tigers tonight at the Rogers Center. The first of 9 in a row at home. Jays are 40-23 at the Rogers Center this season. Meanwhile, those New York Yankees, a game and a half back, open up a road set in Atlanta tonight. Then it's a 3-game set at Fenway, followed by a 3-game home set against the Tampa Bay Rays. So we'll revisit this 9 games from now to see just where everybody stands. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590 are the telephone numbers. Want to hear from you. Your thoughts on that road trip as a whole. I don't know, hey, every loss is disappointing. Yesterday was disappointing. Just didn't go the Blue Jays' way yesterday, despite a pretty well-pitched night from Marco Estrada. 6-2 on that road trip. And don't forget, when they went on that road trip, we were talking about the New York Yankees being able to make a little hay. They had 10 games in a row at home. What would this all look like when it was all said and done? Well, it turns out the Blue Jays were the team on a road trip that went to L.A., or Anaheim, I should say, and Texas. They were the team that made up ground. And they now, heading into a 9-game homestand, have a game and a half lead on the New York Yankees. To me, this is maybe the time where you can get hot again and start to separate a little bit from the Yankees in the AL East. Put it this way. at the end of 9 games, and we'll see what the Yankees do too. Hey, maybe both teams go 9-0. Who knows? At the end of this 9-game stand, if the lead in the American League East is still between a half game and a game and a half, boy, maybe you would have hoped for better. So what did you think of that road trip? What are your expectations for this 9-game homestand? The Detroit Tigers, the Cleveland Indians, the Baltimore Orioles coming to town. It is Brady and Walker. We'll start with Mike in Toronto. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hey, happy Friday.
Hey, you too.
I think that this 9-game homestand is the most important part of the season right now. I think it's even more important than the 7 games against the Yankees for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're playing teams that are below us in the standings, and we have to act like we're an AL East champ. And, you know, if you really think about it, when we face the Yankees those 7 games, it's highly unlikely that any team is going to go 7-0 or 6-1. It's probably going to be a 4-3 or maybe a 5-2 at best, right? So I think this is the time where we can, you know, create a bit of separation against the Yankees. I'm not sure who they're playing over the next 9 games, but they haven't been playing the same type of baseball that we have. So we can, finish this 9-game homestand maybe a 3.5, 4.5 games up. I think we're going to be sitting pretty good to go into the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with almost everything there. The Yankees get 3 on the road in Atlanta starting tonight, and then 3 on the road at Fenway. I know the Red Sox aren't in a great spot right now, but we saw earlier, a few weeks ago, the Red Sox played the Yankees pretty tough. All those divisional games are going to have some intrigue to them. And then it's a 3-game homestand with Tampa. I would agree. And I don't generally fall into the trap of, oh, good teams do this and bad teams do that and good teams assert their will at a certain time. I get it. It's baseball. Weird things happen. I don't expect sweeps all the time. But would I look at these 3 series with the Toronto Blue Jays and say, yeah, win every one. Go 2-1 in every one of these 3-game stretches, finish the homestand at 6-3. Sure, I'd take that. I would take that. And these Detroit Tigers, it's a great example. This team coming in here tonight is not the Detroit Tigers of earlier this season or last season. I know Miguel Cabrera is back. He's healthy. Of course, that guy's an absolute terror. But tonight they get lefty Matt Boyd. And then tomorrow they get Buck Farmer. And the game after that, they get Alfredo Simon. Not exactly Justin Verlander, David Price, and Anibal Sanchez, right? It's not exactly that. Not anymore. The Cleveland Indians can boast some pretty good pitchers as well. You probably get Corey Kluber here, and then the Baltimore Orioles, who still have playoff aspirations themselves, come in. But you're right. This is the time to go on that run. If this ball club can go 6-2 on the road, home is where they play well. Home is where they've played well all season long. Raj in Brampton, you're on Brady and Walker. You're up next. Raj, we got you there? No Raj. All right, no Raj. We will go to, instead, Glenn. Do you want to go to Glenn? Glenn in St. John's, Newfoundland. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I was just wondering, well, obviously I'm a big-time follower of the Jays, like most people across the country. I'm just wondering, I listened to a lot of commentators and things over the past few weeks. It seems to me, I understand nothing but the greatest respect for Mark Burley and things, but I noticed the last few outings, and obviously they are getting tired and whatnot, or maybe, but it seems like everybody's really dismissing the idea of Estrada's been pitching great for a long time.
Sure.
But every time I hear like talks of who's going to be pitching that last week or two, conceivably, and into the playoffs, it's always Burley and Dickey up there. But I'm wondering how often can the Jays come back from 4 and 5 run deficits if the pattern continues?
If the pattern continues is the big question there. Well, Dickey goes again tonight. We'll see. But I've said this in the show for the last week and a half. The season goes in ebbs and flows. The season goes with ups and downs. We all know that. I think the day that this team heads into the postseason on whatever it is, October the 8th, our view of the starting rotation is going to look different than it is right now. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that's a really good thing. I just think that's the way baseball goes. Yeah, Mark Burley is, I'm not concerned, but it bears watching, right? The guy does not go in the DL. It gives you 200 innings every year. He's 36, and he's human. He's mortal. He gets tired. He goes through bad stretches like everybody. Mark Burley's been really good for this team for 3 years. But last year, he had a moment in the second half where he ran into it a little bit. The year before, it was during the first half of the season where he struggled getting out of the gates. I remember talking about Mark Burley in 2013 and saying, you know what, this guy looks about done. The soft-tossing veteran lefty looks about done. Here we are 3 years later, and he's been nothing but good for you. Yeah, Mark Burley has gotten knocked around the last two starts. And I think he's hanging a little bit. It doesn't mean he can't get over that. But I think you have a lot of X factors. What does Drew Hutchison look like next week when he comes back from the minors? Marcus Stroman threw another simulated game today. I'm telling you, I don't know when it's going to be, but Marcus Stroman is going to make big starts for this team. Unless there's a giant setback, and knock on wood, that doesn't happen. If there's no monumental setback, Marcus Stroman's going to start a playoff game for this team. I really believe that. So it's a valid, concern's the wrong word, but it's a valid question. Marco Estrada's been terrific, but he's approaching his career high for innings pitched. He was really good again yesterday. Where is R.A. Dickey going to be 40 games from now or 35 games from now? Where's Mark Burley going to be 35 games from now? I'm not sure. But with each and every start, especially on this homestand, it bears watching. There's no doubt about it. Pat Etobicoke, you're on Brady and Walker. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's scary. This homestand for me is a scary one.
Why?
Well, you know, coming off this nice road trip and everything, you just said, right? The season is full of ups and downs, ebbs and flows. And I'm worried that this could be one of those down parts, right? You just kind of, you get comfortable, you're being at home, and, you know, you're excited about everything that's going on. And then, you know, you start to feel the pressure of needing to win all these games or needing to beat these opponents. And, you know, things just don't go your way. That's the way baseball works. And I'm just worried this might be one of those periods, right?
I think it's a documented thing in sports. I can't explain it. If I had the answer to it, I would be sitting in a different chair right now with probably a better shirt. But why do teams come back from long road trips and fall flat for a game? I don't know. Don't have an answer to it. It's been around in hockey for a long time. It's certainly around in football. There are such a thing as letdown type of games. And coaches can't predict it, players can't predict it, and bookies and bettors try to predict it, right? Same with the NBA as well. Is tonight, individually speaking, a letdown game? Hey, historically it happens. But I also look at this team and how they've played and how confident they're feeling, and then I look at the Detroit Tigers coming in, and they're still grinding. They're still playing. But again, it's all about that night starting pitcher. And Matt Boyd and Buck Farmer and then Alfredo Simone, even though he had a nice shutout last time out. This isn't Justin Verlander, who's pitching really well right now, actually. Anibal Sanchez and David Price or Doug Fister or, right, the different types of guys that have pitched for this Detroit Tigers team. They can hit, but the Blue Jays like where they're at right now. I get it. Right, some people are glass half empty. Some people are, boy, what if the worst case scenario happens? This is what you want right now. And the Blue Jays, by the way, will not get Corey Kluber. I was just told in that Cleveland series, he pitches Sunday instead. So more good news. This is what you want, right? You want teams coming in that are maybe down in their luck. The Blue Jays are playing as good as we've seen in a long time right now. Jamie Campbell joins us now on Brady and Walker. He will be down at the Rogers Center tonight. Good to be back at the Rogers Center, I suppose, instead of here on Mount Pleasant, isn't it, Jamie?
It is always, always nicer down at the ballpark itself, Andrew, than at the studio. No disrespect to all the people we work with there.
The last time we talked, I can't remember exactly what date it was. Of course, it was an exciting time. But I think we were just embarking on the territory where you would, you know, go on your cell phone to the Ticketmaster app or what have you, and there's no tickets to be found for these home games. Mm-hmm. I expect more of the same this weekend. But talk about the excitement that you've seen. And does it start earlier and earlier from your vantage point?
The excitement that I am seeing every day is really enjoyable for me because I find I'm stopped routinely on the street to talk about the ball club. And I actually heard from somebody today who said that this is the first time that they have been glued to either their television or radio every single day for years and years. I think he mentioned going back 20 years or so, because it's an insatiable appetite for some people. They just can't get enough of this march toward a postseason berth, and you can't blame them. I feel exactly the same way. I actually went into the ticket office not long ago to actually purchase a couple of tickets for this series, the Detroit series coming up. And as I was standing there with the ticket agent at the Blue Jays office, they showed me that for the game I had requested, there were about, all told, 8 seats remaining. And while I was busy trying to figure out which 2 I wanted, the screen disappeared. And that person turned around and told me that in the time it took me to try and figure out whether or not I wanted said seats or not, they were sold.
Yeah.
And I think it's fantastic. And I'm hearing from people, goodness, I'm having people get in touch with me that I honestly haven't spoken to since the 1980s. And it's not so much, can you get me something? Can you get me seats or anything like that? It's more, wow, you know, this is really exciting. I'm back into Blue Jays baseball. You know, just wanted to reach out and touch base. It's fantastic.
Now, how is she? Did you break up with her? Did she break up with you? How did that?
Actually, it wasn't a girl. There was a guy that I used to be a dishwasher at the Howard Johnson's. I don't even think it's a Howard Johnson's hotel anymore, in Oakville, right at the QEW and Trafalgar Road. And one of the cooks reached out to me yesterday, and I didn't, you know, this is my high school days, the early to mid 80s. And I just thought, man, that's incredible. Like, this is not a person I would have kept in touch with, not a person I would have seen in 30 years. And it's remarkable to hear.
Jamie Campbell, our guest, host of Blue Jays Central. It goes tonight at 6:30, getting set for the Blue Jays and the Detroit Tigers. It's interesting looking back on, I guess it's just over a week ago, a week and a half ago, Blue Jays go on this road trip. And any road trip is tough. You know, you don't expect to go 6-2 on the road, no matter where you play. 2 in Philly, 3 in Anaheim, then 3 in Texas. At the same time, the Yankees, who were playing pretty well, had 10 consecutive games at Yankee Stadium. And here we are when the dust settles and the Blue Jays are the team with a game and a half lead in the American League East. It all leads me to believe that this game, this 9-game homestand, does it feel like now is the time, if you're talking about separation, if you're talking about putting some distance between you and the Yankees, it might be the next week and a half?
Yes, it's a good opportunity, that's for sure. Let's not forget that they still have 7 games to play against each other before the season is over. And the Yankees start a series in Atlanta tonight, so you know, they're capable of going on the road and doing well, although, boy, they're having one piece of bad news after the other, it seems, with you know, CC Sabathia having his season come to an end. And I was watching the game the other day against Houston, and I mean, Mark Teixeira can barely run at this point. Mm-hmm. And we all know about the slump that Alex Rodriguez is in. So, you know, they're capable of doing good things on the road too, but the truth is we know how well the Blue Jays play at home. I believe they're 16 games above 500 at the Rogers Center. This is a place they're awfully comfortable. And when they left last time, they were a half game behind the Yankees. They went out on that road trip, lost only twice, and managed to put a game and a half on New York. And the Yankees even had some games in hand when they did leave. So they're in a fantastic position because they're back home where they play so well. They've got an opportunity over the course of the next 9 games over 10 days to, as you say, put a little space on them and New York. And then by the time they hit the road again, you know, that schedule will have dwindled down. Let's be honest. The calendar is not the friend of those who are sitting in second or third place or trying to get into that wild card race. Eventually, teams are just going to run out of time.
Does Matt Boyd fit the mold of, for lack of a better term, an all-you-can-eat buffet for Blue Jays hitters?
Well, before we make that claim, you know, we have seen the Blue Jays, especially against lefties in our history, go up against a guy they've never seen before, and in many cases a young pitcher, and at the end of the game you're thinking to yourself, wow, where did that come from? But, you know, I'm going to take a wild guess and say they're going to be fairly successful against him at the plate tonight, because I think the circumstances are one that Matt Boyd has probably never had to deal with in his life. He's been in the big leagues such a short time. And I know when he made his major league debut for the Blue Jays against Texas, he pitched fairly well. But it wasn't in front of a sellout crowd. It wasn't in front of a team that was in the position they're in at this point. And it certainly wasn't against a team that is as fortified as it is now, because Tulowitzki wasn't here at that time. Ben Revere wasn't here at that time. You know, this team wasn't nearly as good when Matt Boyd pitched for them as they are now. And as Greg Zahn pointed out yesterday, man, this club is intimidating people right now. You know, there aren't any pitchers out there seemingly interested in making a Blue Jay hitter move his feet. And if that's the case, they're going to go up there and do all the damage they feel they can do. So I'm anticipating it could be a tough night for Matt Boyd, but he is a big league pitcher. There's a reason he is where he is, and anything can happen. This is a game of baseball, after all.
The Detroit Tigers, who, hey, they can still hurt you, especially with the bats, but they are now 60-67. They're 5.5 games back of the second wild card. The Fat Lady is not singing yet, but warming up on their season. That said, the big lull right around the trade deadline for them, and maybe the biggest reason they decided to move off of David Price and move off of Yoenis Cespedes, was the 6-week to 8-week injury to Miguel Cabrera. Cabrera is back and doing what he does. It's difficult to chart, you know, wins above replacement or what one guy can mean at a certain position to a team, but there's absolutely no doubt that injury to Miguel Cabrera single-handedly derailed this season.
Absolutely, it did. And I mean, it's not the only reason, but it's a major reason, because, you know, we've all seen teams that tend to fold up a little bit when their best player is out for a lengthy period of time. And I know J.D. Martinez is having a terrific year. But the truth is that, you know, Miguel Cabrera is the guy that has been the engine for that club for 10 years now. He's, you know, quite possibly the best hitter of his generation, straight up. You know, his return is going to be meaningful, but I just tend to think at this point in the year, with September arriving on Tuesday, and the fact that now the Tigers do not possess David Price and Cespedes, as you mentioned, and Joaquin Soria at the back end of their bullpen, I just don't know if they have the necessary players to be able to overcome the deficit that they are in right now. So they'll have to pull off one heck of a September to get themselves back into that race.
Jamie Campbell, our guest, Brady Walker, Sportsnet 590, the fan, Sportsnet 360. Our last caller before we got to you, we talked about the rotation a little bit. This has been a topic throughout the week. And it's difficult to extrapolate, okay, so let's say there's a divisional series. What three, possibly four pitchers are you trotting out there? Things could look a lot different 35 games from now. The X factor in all of this is the what feels like an imminent return of Marcus Stroman and the gas tanks on both R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley. Do you have a feeling one way or another how this all shakes out?
It's too hard now to try and guess where they will be at the end of September and try and predict where Burley's going to be, where R.A. Dickey's going to be. You know, you pretty well know what you're going to get from David Price at the end of September, because historically he's never had a point in his career where he's just become utterly ineffective after a lengthy season. But let's be honest about Marcus Stroman. It's exciting that he is probably going to return in September. I don't think there's any question about that. He's going to pitch for Lansing on the 2nd. He'll pitch 5 days later for the Buffalo Bisons. And then it's probably up to the big club. But we have to wait and see what he is going to do against some professional hitters, even if they are single A and eventually triple A hitters. And I wouldn't be penciling him into the rotation just yet. But here's the best part. The Blue Jays have that luxury of taking a look, figuring out where they stand with him, and then making that decision as we get close. Now, if all goes well, they have a great homestand, they put a little distance on the Yankees, and maybe they get themselves into a position where they can, you know, clinch a division, for example, at a certain point before the month ends. They can line up things the way they want to for a divisional series and make the decisions based on results that they need to make. If that includes Marcus Stroman, fantastic. It will have been for a reason, though, obviously. But they will have that luxury. They will have that choice. And it's impossible to predict right now what those choices will be.
In your time covering this team, especially this season, there's, to me, four major surprises here, and each and every one of them has played a big-time role in where the Blue Jays stand currently. What has been the biggest surprise to you? Is it Kevin Pillar going from fourth outfielder to everyday center fielder? Is it Ozuna going from 20-year-old to seasoned 30-year-old closer? Is it Chris Colabello from obscurity to what he's done, or Marco Estrada from swing guy to arguably your second best starter? Which one has blown your doors off the most?
Well, you pretty well just named them all. I don't think you can classify one of those players as the biggest surprise. What Kevin Pillar has done in becoming the everyday center fielder is a huge reason why the Blue Jays are where they are at. You know, has he, you know, lately I think he hit about 310 on that road trip. So the bat's coming around and he's probably feeling very, very comfortable in the lineup that he's in right now. His glove is, you know, as good as anybody's in the American League. Every time I hear somebody say, well, Kevin Kiermaier is the best defensive center fielder in the American League, I think, well, hasn't anybody watched Kevin Pillar lately? Estrada's been a hugely pleasant surprise. And remember when that trade was made and everybody looked at the home run totals he gave up last year with the Brewers and noticed he was coming to a team that played in a hitter-friendly park, people thought, well, how in the world is he going to succeed as a Blue Jay? And he's done just that. He's been an absolute rock in that rotation. And I mean, Colabello didn't even make this team out of spring training. And he has bought himself some credibility in big league baseball based on what he's done with the bats. There isn't one guy. And even Ryan, look at what Ryan Goins has been doing lately, as much with the glove as with the bat. His approach at the plate seems to have changed dramatically. And we all know what he's capable of doing with the glove. This is just a top to bottom, an extremely well-rounded team. And one of the reasons they're sitting in first place right now is because of that supporting cast.
A 9-game homestand begins tonight on the Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on Sportsnet as well, Blue Jays Central, with Jamie Campbell and Greg Zahn, gets going at 6:30 tonight. Thanks for your time, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Great to talk with you, Andrew.
All right, we'll see you tonight. That is Jamie Campbell from the Blue Jays broadcast in Sportsnet at Blue Jays Central. Again, 6:30, 7:07, first pitch. We'll have it for you right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It will be R.A. Dickey going up against one-time Blue Jay Matt Boyd, who showed some good here at the Rogers Center in his debut. The next time out, not so much, as he failed to get out of that first inning and has been up and down, you can say, as a member of the Detroit Tigers, of course, went over in the David Price deal. Coming up on the show, we do have a great show lined up for you, including Dan Plesac, former Blue Jay, now with the MLB Network. He will join us. Tony Finau, up in the running, you could say, for PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, and as of right now is tied for the lead in round one of the Barclays, the first stop in the FedEx Cup, Champions Tour. Brent Sutter as well will join us in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll talk about the late Al Arbor, longtime NHL coach, second only to Scotty Bowman in terms of wins and games coached in the NHL. Brent Sutter played for Al Arbor for a long time on the island. Also, the mailbag coming up after 3:40 this afternoon, a Friday staple of Brady and Walker. Tweet us your questions at Fan590Walker or at Brady and Walker. So, saw this today, and on the list of bad ideas, just things that aren't, they're not worth the effort, this is right up there. An Ohio high school football team is continuing, or at least trying to continue, their tradition right now. Everyone has a mascot, right? I was just in Philly. They have the Fanatic there. Of course, we have Ace down at the Rogers Center, Carlton, all of that. But for decades, the season has kicked off for this Ohio high school football team with a live, not stuffed, preferably stuffed, but live tiger. They are the, I don't know what their nicknames are. I assume they're the Tigers. So exotic animal bylaws, I suppose, in the state of Ohio, are getting a little stricter. And The Independent down in Ohio reports that the boosters for the Washington High School displayed a cub in their cage at Thursday's game. And they kind of snuck it in, I guess. So no one is allowed to say whether it's going to continue, this longstanding tradition. But it's a bad idea. When you think of worst-case scenario, best-case scenario, I think anything in life, you have to look at best-case scenario, worst-case scenario. You are a group of high school football players and cheerleaders and athletes and parents and all that. And you're sitting in the stands. Best case scenario. The best case is somebody says, hey, neat, a tiger. That's it. It's best case. The worst case scenario, everybody dies. not everybody, but enough people. Down the tiger, the man-eating tiger, and put him back in the cage. On Sportsnet 360 right now, we have tiger mascots dancing to songs. If you're going to have a tiger mascot, preferably a real mascot and not a real tiger. Just remember that. Any decision you make today, best case scenario, worst case scenario. Best case scenario, hey, cool, a tiger. Worst case scenario, your arms get ripped off. That's Braden Walker's lesson today. Lots coming up, including Dan Plesak, Tony Finau, as mentioned, in the 3 o'clock hour when we come back. The Buffalo Bills, preseason game number 3, coming up tomorrow afternoon against the Pittsburgh Steelers. 3 games too many, if you ask me. We'll talk to Tyler Dunn, who writes for the Bills, Buffalo Bills beat writer for the Buffalo News, who has the leg up in this quarterback competition. Best and worst coming up as well. Braden Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. On your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the show. It is Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet 360, Jays and the Detroit Tigers coming up tonight at the Rogers Center. Game 1 of a 9-game homestand. Do you agree? Now is the time to get that separation in the American League East. Who would have thought Jays went on that 8-game road trip? Well, it looked like a pretty daunting 8-game road trip. And were, what were they, a half game back heading in. And now they're a game and a half up on the Yankees, who have not left the friendly confines of Yankee Stadium the whole time until tonight when they opened up a 3-game set against the Atlanta Braves. By the way, every Friday, you know what that means, Braden Walker's Friday Mailbag is coming up in a couple hours from now, so 2 hours to get your questions in. You can fire us a tweet at Brady and Walker or at Fan590 Walker. Ask us anything, sports, non-sports, what you want to know. I'll do my best to answer, even if I don't know the answer. That's kind of what we do here on the show. The Buffalo Bills, game number 3 in the preseason against the Pittsburgh Steelers, coming up tomorrow afternoon. All eyes, of course, will be on the quarterback situation. Tyler Dunn covers the Bills for the Buffalo News. He joins us now on Brady and Walker. Good afternoon, Tyler. How are you?
Great. Good to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, great to have you on. It will be EJ Manuel under center to start tomorrow's game. But the question people are asking, does it even really matter at this point? Is there anything that EJ Manuel can do to wrestle that starting job away?
I really don't think so. I mean, this is going to be a culmination of everything. I mean, OTAs, mini camp, training camp. And when you really add it all up, I mean, EJ Manuel is so far behind those other two quarterbacks that I think a lot of people are really surprised that they're even giving him this starting nod. I mean, Rex Ryan cites fairness and giving everybody a fair shot. EJ Manuel, he did have a couple nice drives those first two games against second and third stringers. But, I mean, at the end of the day, every great throw he makes in training camp, whether it's a dart down the sideline or a deep ball, I mean, it's followed by bobble snap. It's followed by a throw into the hospitality tent. He drilled a cameraman on the sideline last week. He's just so inconsistent that I cannot see a situation, a scenario where he does something Saturday that you know, makes him the starting quarterback here in Buffalo.
I guess if you look at it, though, best case scenario, worst case scenario, there were those that would say, hey, EJ Manuel's doing his best to stay on this roster. Are we past that conversation, at least?
Maybe that's probably the conversation that we all should be having here. I mean, is this guy worth the number three quarterback spot on this roster? And Rex Ryan has said that he'd be up for keeping three quarterbacks, even though a lot of teams don't really do that. So it remains to be seen. I tend to think that more than that, they're selling EJ Manuel for a potential trade. I mean, they never say that publicly right now, but EJ Manuel has referenced the tape several times and seems reserved to the fact that he might be on a different team when the season begins. So by putting him out there against starters, other teams can see EJ Manuel, and if he does well, maybe the Bills get a draft pick and kind of salvage what's been one of the worst draft picks in recent history for the Buffalo Bills.
Tyler Dunn joins us here on Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360. He covers the Buffalo Bills for the Buffalo News. You can follow him on Twitter at Ty Dunn, D-U-N-N-E. Rex Ryan has said about that quarterbacking position that nobody can say that anybody wasn't given a shot, a fair shot at least, or fair enough reps. Can we say that about Bills training camp?
I think so. And, you know, I think Manuel's supporters would argue that, you know, he hasn't had a lot of first-team reps. Those have really gone almost exclusively to Matt Castle and Tyrod Taylor. I mean, Manuel has really been working with the backups throughout training camp. But, I mean, when you're overthrowing receivers with no defense on the field, what do you want coaches to do? I mean, I think that it was a smart move for the Bills to really kind of give Taylor and Castle nearly all the work with the starters. I mean, because if you divide it up three ways equally, how in the heck do you get any chemistry between the quarterback and the receiver? How do you get any cohesion whatsoever? I think the Bills actually handled it really well. They split the field with two groups for the most part, Taylor on one side, Castle with the other. They swapped working with the first team. And by and large, talking to the receivers, Robert Woods told me last week that he feels like they do have that chemistry down, that he knows where that ball is going to be from Taylor, from Castle, when he cuts out of his route on the sideline, for example. So, you know, you add it all up. I think that Manuel, yeah, I mean, maybe he didn't get a fair shot. He didn't work for the first team a lot, but you have to earn that shot, and I don't really think he earned it.
Tyler, who gives this team the best chance to win in week one?
Man, I you know, this is a team, I don't know who gives them the best chance myself, but this is a team that's taken chances at every turn. They've taken risks and gambled at every turn. You know, they signed Richie Incognito. They signed Percy Harvin. They trade for LeSean McCoy. Their offensive line coach punches a minor, is arrested, and they settle out of court. He's not fired. I mean, they just suspend the guy. They sign a IKM and Polly after he breaks the jaw of Geno Smith. You know, this is all outside-the-box type of thinking, and if you're going to think that way, I think they'd go with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, he's got the most upside. I mean, you can use him in the read option. He can scramble. He's got a strong arm, albeit maybe not as accurate as Matt Castle. And yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I don't really, it's more of a gut feeling than anything. But I think Rex Ryan, if push came to shove and he had to take a chance, he would take it at quarterback too. And it's what he's done all offseason.
It's funny. IKN and Polly, for all the wrong reasons, turns into a bit of a household name in NFL America. Does he have a shot to make this team or make a difference or both?
You know, believe it or not, he really does. They actually need this guy. They've had some injuries on the front seven, Jarius Wynn being one of them. He was a backup there, defensive end. And they, under Rex Ryan and Dennis Thurman, they like those players who are kind of elephant ends. They can stand up and they can put their hand in the dirt. You know, adds a little creativity, a little confusion to the offense. And in theory, IK is that guy. I mean, they drafted him in New York for a reason. He gets after the quarterback. He's violent, whether it's on or off the field. And I think that right now he makes the team. I mean, he's working with the second team defense, hasn't done a lot of great things, but they see strength, a lot of inline pass rush ability. Yeah, it's wild to say, but I think that Rex Ryan will keep him on the roster.
Ryan says he's cautiously optimistic LeSean McCoy is ready for week one. Are you seeing anything different?
You know, I really think it's probably 50-50.
Yeah.
On one hand, yeah, he's out there working at the ladder, on the sideline, doing conditioning work. It seems like he's easing his way back, and they still have a couple weeks before that opener. On the other hand, he's a 27-year-old running back with just a ton of touches on his resume. I want to say it's, you know, north of 1,600. And this is when you've seen backs in the past shut down, begin to fade away. Deshaun Alexander, DeAndre James, those kinds of guys. So I think that concern is going to be in the back of their mind. And and maybe they will want to be ultra cautious with him and just stick with Fred Jackson for a week or two, and then some of these other backs remains to be seen. But you know, long story short, this is the identity of the offense. They signed LeSean McCoy to be really the engine that makes this thing go, and they need him on the field.
It is a really intriguing team, and the more we talk about it, the more I talk about it, the less sure I am about anything. I guess we have to you know, look, you know, 4 or 5 weeks from now. I'll ask you this in this sense. Can it work? Like, what is a more likely scenario? The Buffalo Bills win 5 games in the AFC East or win 11 games?
It's mind-blowing. I'm totally with you on that. This team could be 11-5. This team could be 5-11. I mean, we've seen this type of locker room just work out, you know, beautifully. I mean, Seattle, for example, they have all kinds of different personalities in that locker room. When I covered the Packers, I was out there for a couple weeks, and they say whatever they want. And it's a lot like the Bills locker room. They shine personalities. They let guys be themselves, and they've been to 2 straight Super Bowls. Or, you know what? It's a house of cards. It just blows up in their face, and that's kind of what the Oakland Raiders have been for a decade or so.
Yeah.
So it can go one of two ways here. You know, I just can't get past the fact that all the playoff teams last year and in recent years, I mean, they had competent quarterback play. This is such a quarterback-driven league that if the Bills don't have that player, they're not going to do anything quite yet, and they're still completely up in the air.
And it's amazing to think that the last time a team kind of defied that logic and the quarterback was not the most important guy, it was a Rex Ryan team, right? It was the New York
right.
Jets. That's how it was. And Mark Sanchez at the time, tough to say he was a top half quarterback in the NFL, but, I mean, he was certainly at that juncture better than what the Bills have.
I agree. And that's why I kind of keep coming back to Taylor. I mean, he's still more of the unknown. I mean, you know that what Castle is going to bring. He's had 2 okay, somewhat solid years as a starter. Other than that, he's just kind of been a guy. Where Taylor, I mean, this is a player they coveted in the offseason. I talked to Doug Whaley, the GM. He admitted they were thinking of Russell Wilson. They were thinking of Colin Kaepernick when they acquired this guy. So if you want to think outside the box and take a chance, you would name him the starter.
Yeah, used to cover the Green Bay Packers for a lot of years. I got about 30 seconds here. Then we got to run. But they lose Jordy Nelson, and that offense, it was setting up to be, well, I'll say record-setting this season. Can they skip Jordy Nelson without a beat, or is this a big-time blow?
To be honest, I think they're going to be fine. You know, before I headed out to Buffalo, I was there for OTAs and minicamp, and the best player on the field was Davante Adams. I mean, this guy is on the verge of stardom. I think Jordy Nelson's one of the best in the league, but I think Davante Adams can easily step right in and keep that offense moving.
Hey, thanks for this, Tyler. We appreciate it.
Hey, you got it, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
Tyler Dunn covers the Bills. Great stuff for the Buffalo News. Follow him at Ty Dunn. That's D-U-N-N-E. A couple minutes to go. Let's do best and worst.
Best.
Oil can Boyd.
And worst.
Matt Boyd.
With Brady and Walker.
Matt Boyd goes tonight for the Tigers. See, you're tempting fate right now. Tempting fate. If Matt Boyd comes into the Rogers Center tonight and fires a complete game 4 hitter, you know who to blame. It's best and worst voice guy. All right, best player, worst player. Best win, worst loss here on Brady and Walker. Worst loss. Ah, this made me mad last night. The Minnesota Twins, I don't know, I have a soft spot for the Twins. I do. But the Minnesota Twins lose 5-4 in Tampa at crappy Tropicana Field. And the field does it again. So Sano hits a bullet of a ball, a bomb of a ball that hits one of those stupid catwalks, and they give him a double. He hit it about 480 feet and winds up with a double, not a home run. Wouldn't you know it, Twins lose by 1. Lousy field, worst loss, Minnesota Twins. Best win, the New York Mets. I don't know how they do it. They keep on rolling. Well, I know how they do it. The pitching's been fantastic. But you remember early in the year, people were ready to burn down Citi Field because this team couldn't hit. Now they're hitting everything. Down 5-0 to the Philadelphia Phillies last night. Win 9-5 in 13. Best player, Damian Warner. He and Andre DeGrasse are the two reasons to be watching the Olympics when they come to Rio. He is sitting second in the decathlon at the World Track and Field Championships after 5 events. The other 5 will go tomorrow, I believe. And worst player, Mike Richards of the, I guess he's still with the LA Kings, arrested. The Manitoba border. Charged with possession of controlled substances. I don't got time to get into it. But it's bad. Don't do that. Best and worst. Brady Walker continues after this. Dan Plesac coming up at 2:30. We will remember Al Arbor as well coming up with former Islander great Brent Sutter. Still to come. Brady Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360.